Welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. This is your host, Eric Hart.
And Ashley Flowers. This week, we're going to talk about resumes and cover letters.
Yeah, we all have to apply for jobs. So you got to know how to write that resume and you got to know how to write that cover letter, especially when you're first starting out.
Yes, because it is your first impression and you want it to be a good one.
Mm-hmm. And as a props person, you're also going to need a portfolio and pictures of your work. So we're actually going to devote our very next episode entirely to that subject. So stick around. But this week is all about those resumes and cover letters.
Yep. Let's start out with explaining what cover letter and resume is.
Yeah. Quickly. So in a lot of parts of the world, they use a curriculum vitae, which is a multi-page document. And if you apply for academic jobs, you'll use that as well. And it's basically your entire job history. So what we're talking about in the U.S., a resume is usually a one-page document, basically giving the highlights of your job history, education, special skills, all of that, which we'll explain in a little bit. And then the cover letter is essentially your introduction. It's when you see a job posting, you write a letter saying that you're interested in applying for the job. But there's a very sort of specific format and a lot of do's and don'ts for writing the best cover letter.
And we have both received good ones and we've both received bad ones.
Yes.
So and we have some thoughts.
Indeed we have. So I actually have a question. So usually when I write a cover letter, I just kind of write an email and do the cover letter and attach my resume and send that off. But I've also received an email that's very brief that says, I'm applying for the job and I've attached a cover letter. So the cover letter itself is a separate attachment as a PDF. And I'm kind of curious, like, do you prefer one or the other? Or do you even understand, like, why people do that?
I prefer having a cover letter as an attachment because I like to download it, save it to my computer, and keep the cover letter, resume, and portfolio all in one folder.
Oh, okay.
So I can easily, I can easily bring them all up and look at them all together. I'm not going back and forth between my email and their resume on my computer.
Oh,
it
that
just keeps
makes
me
a lot
more
of
organized.
Sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
maybe I'll actually start doing that.
Yes. But I, at the same time, when you're writing the email and you do have it attached, I don't want to be like, I'm applying for this job. Here it is.
Right. Like, yeah. You still have to do
a little bit of personality there.
A little bit of something there. So,
exactly.
So as we get started, first, a little bit of like general email etiquette. When you're applying for a job, it's a very crucial first impression and you want to make sure it's right. So you're going to, this is something I just learned. When you're writing an email, write the body first, get that all right. Then attach your attachments, your resume and your cover letter, then put in the subject line. And only when everything is perfect, do you add the recipient email in the to box. That way you're not like writing something and you have something incomplete, or even worse, you have some like goofy filler that you swear you're going to change later and you accidentally hit send and the email address is there. So it goes to the person. So you send off like, here's my cover letter, blah, blah, blah. And you actually write blah, 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 because you haven't written the body yet, but you accidentally hit send.
Oh my goodness.
Or it's like, oh, I hit return and that was actually sending the email. So body, attachment, subject. Then recipient.
Yes, because there have been times I have received half-written emails, or I've received an application that has no attachments. They didn't attach it before they sent it. And that's just an immediate turnoff for me. I'm like, okay, well, you didn't take the time. You clearly don't care. Okay, bye.
Yeah, it's definitely like a red flag. It's like, is this person going to take, is going to have the same lack of care and a lack of attention to detail on stage and with their props and with their work? And when they tell me something, am I going to be sure that they've actually done it, or do they just think they did?
Yeah, because you have to keep in mind, this is your very first impression. Unless it's somebody you've worked with before and you know, but still, you want it to be professional. But this is your first impression, and if there is the slightest red flag there, I've got several other applications that I have to go through, so I'm not going to spend the time on this. I'm going to be more judgmental looking at them.
Yeah. Cool. So the cover letter, when you're writing a cover letter, Ashley, is there any sort of specific format you like to stick to?
Yeah, I usually do a typical 3-paragraph, maybe 4-paragraph, depending on the person, format. And in that, the first is an introduction, where I found the job, what job I'm applying for, and quickly why I would be a good candidate. And the middle section, the body of the cover letter, goes into detail of why I'm a good candidate and describes situations that I've had to handle when things got tough, maybe between like a director and designer, or I had to quickly come up with a solution for a prop. Going in more detail, pulling from the resume, but not repeating the resume, saying, I worked here for so many years. And then the last paragraph is just, you know, your typical conclusion, a very brief thank you. I'm a good candidate because of A, B, and C, which I described beforehand, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Right. Yeah. I usually like the cover letter to definitely be kept to a single page and just those kind of three paragraphs. And depending on the length of your middle, it might become 4 paragraphs, because I also like to hear what interests them about the job. Like what specifically about either the theater or the kind of work you do or what the job description is. Because a lot of times, you know, we're all applying for jobs because we need money and we need to pay the bills. And that's kind of the worst question during an interview. Like, why do you want to work here? Because I need money. But, you know, our field is also, it's not really the highest paid field. So there's plenty of other places to work where you'll make more money.
Exactly.
So I want to know, like, why they're applying for this specific position. Because a lot of times these jobs are seasonal and you're hiring people at the beginning of the season. And if they're not completely committed or interested, they might leave in the middle of the season. And suddenly you have to replace this person and everybody else already has jobs. So who are you going to replace them with?
Yeah.
So just knowing the difference between somebody who might leave versus somebody who is like interested enough to stick it out to the end is really important.
Yeah, it is. And we've also spoken with Jen McClure, who is the props master at Yale Repertory Theater. And she's also been on our show before. And we were asking her what she likes and doesn't like in cover letters, resumes, and portfolios. And she brought up a really good point in cover letters that it needs to also show your personality. Because you also have to keep in mind, as I've said before, this is your first impression to the person. And if it's very bland and very just factual, nothing's bringing the reader in, why am I going to lean towards yours than somebody who has an equivalent application?
Right. Yeah, you don't want to make it seem like you're just doing the bare minimum. I get cover letters where, again, this goes back to the interest as well, but you get a sense that they would be excited to work with you and that they like theater as a career and they like what you're doing. And then you get other cover letters where it sounds like their professor told them they have to apply to 4 jobs and they're just like, it's an assignment to them and they're trying to get it over with as quick as possible.
Yeah. Or it's like a copy and paste.
Right. Yeah.
You can always tell when a cover letter has just been mass produced.
Right. Yeah.
And that drives me crazy. Yeah. Like, take the time, research, put some energy into it.
Right, yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we want to work with people who want to work with us. You know, we want to be around good personalities. We want somebody excited about their work.
Right.
We don't want someone just like, oh, well, here's another application.
Yeah. And I'll definitely do like a template. I mean, the actual, like, most of the cover letter is not going to really change, but I make sure that I leave like areas where I'm being specific to what the job posting says and to what the theater says. And so this is important when you're writing your cover letter to just to really triple check, make sure that you have the correct theater's name. You know, especially if you're, that's the worst thing about these copy paste things. You're like, you're working at Yale and halfway through, they're talking about how they'll love to work at Juilliard with you. And you're like, where were you applying before this? So triple
check. Which I have received those type of cover letters before.
Double check the spelling of the name of the person you're sending it to. Like me, my name is not H-E-A-R-T, and it drives me crazy when that misspelling is used for me.
Oh, yeah.
And just finding out who to address the cover letter to, you know, a lot of times the job postings don't necessarily give you a name of who you should send the materials to. And the email address they provide is just going to be some generic temporary address set up for the job. So it'll be like jobs@santafe.org. So you don't really know who it's being sent to. But it's easy enough to go to the theater's website and look up who you think your direct supervisor would be and address it to them. You can't really go wrong if you address it to like the production manager, but if it's in the props department, you can't go wrong addressing it to the props master. Even if it first goes to the production manager, you know, they'll see like, oh, it's addressed to Eric, but he's going to read it anyway, so this is fine. It's
exactly.
It's when it says like Dear Yale or Dear Public Theater.
Jen mentioned she has had, and I was blown away that this is a thing. Like, I don't understand. Like, take the time and effort to do some research if you're really interested. Because if you're just putting Dear Yale or To Whom It May Concern,
right,
which is honestly one of my biggest pet peeves, it just completely turns me off to your application.
Right.
Because I'm like, you're not even going to take the 5 seconds it does to Google search the theater.
Especially, if you list research as one of your skills on your resume.
Oh my gosh, right?
Like, I love research, To Whom It May Concern.
That's the best. Yeah, it's, you definitely just take the time. It really does make a difference.
Right. So yeah, that first paragraph, you know, make sure it's a little custom to say exactly where you found out about the job. Was it offstage jobs? Was it art search? If somebody who works for the company told you about the job, definitely say that. I mean, if you already have some connection to the place, that always goes over well.
Yeah. And I would also on that, make sure it's okay to put their name there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, anytime you're putting a name on as a reference in your resume or in a cover letter as a reference, always ask that person. Because there have been times where I've gotten calls where previous staff members have put me down as a reference, never told me. I get a call saying, hey, I'm interviewing so-and-so. They put you down as a reference. Can you tell me something about them?
Oh, my goodness.
And the first thing I tell them is, they didn't tell me they were going to put me down as a reference.
Right, yeah.
But sure, let's talk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's getting...
Maybe I'm a little too brutal. It's okay.
It's getting into references. But there, I've definitely heard of people who have been called up for a reference by somebody they would not recommend. And so
then it becomes
interesting really fast because you find out a lot about the potential candidate.
Yeah.
Cool. So that second paragraph. So you're talking about like kind of like your work history and why you would be a good candidate. So I think it's definitely important here to say, don't just rehash your resume. Your resume is going to have a basic list of your most important jobs, or if you're just starting off, every job you've ever done. And so you don't need to copy and paste that. The person's going to have the cover letter and the resume. So they're going to, you don't just have redundant information. Your cover letter is kind of where you like pick out one or two of those experiences and sort of specific things in there that will describe what makes you a good candidate for the job. So often, you know, with your resume, you have a whole like laundry list of jobs, and it's hard to tell which was like the job that inspired you to get into props or the job that was your most intense experience or something like that. So that's why you write about it in your cover letter. You could be like, you know, you notice on my resume, I worked at this theater, and during that summer was, you know, I had a supervisor who made me fall in love with props, and during this, you know, during the summer, we had this experience, or this director was very difficult to deal with, and this is how I handled it, or...
And there's also been times where the cover letter is kind of a starting point to a bigger conversation in an interview.
Right, exactly. Yeah, if you could
Which is always nice. I love reading a cover letter and going, oh, I want to know more about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's great that, you know, you've hooked the interviewer.
Yeah, that I think that's like... the ideal of a cover letter, if it's memorable enough or interesting enough that the person interviewing you brings it up, then you've really done your job.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, something other people have brought up is don't make assumptions, like saying, I know I'll be an asset to your staff, you know, or like, yeah, I know you'll enjoy having me around or something like that. it's that fine line of like, you want to tell why you're a good candidate, but you don't want to tell them why they will think that you're a good candidate, if that makes sense.
And there have been times where I have written this, or I have seen this written saying, I believe I will be a good asset to your team because of X, Y, and Z. Instead of just saying, I'll benefit you. Don't worry about it. I got you.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, if we're going to say that, explain a little bit. And that's usually what's going to happen in the third paragraph, is you kind of give, you know, why I'm good for your team because of what I just said in the previous paragraph, kind of rehashing and kind of bringing it all full circle.
Right.
And then I have a question for you on the signing off, I guess, of the cover letter. Do you have a preference on sincerely, thank you, best, or does it even phase you?
None of the sort of typical sign-offs really phase me. If there's something like really weird, then yeah, but nothing really springs to mind. I mean, if it says sincerely and then your name or whatever, you know. It's all fine either way.
No, it doesn't bother me either. I'm just always curious because I know some people prefer sincerely, or they prefer thank you. You know, people have their preferences.
Right.
And that's another thing. Everybody has an opinion about how to do a cover letter and resume and portfolio. And I'm sure there's people listening that are like, no, I would never do it that way.
Right. Yeah. there's definitely like conflicting information out there. I heard, as a compromise, I heard once, you're allowed one exclamation point in your cover letter. So you don't want to come off like too
overly
excited, multiple exclamation points. But it kind of shows some enthusiasm and some fun to kind of throw it in as well. Again, you can't, it's tough to assume too much formality. You know, the trouble is when you're like too informal for what they're expecting. So you could always like be like one or two steps too formal. It's like what they say for interviews. You want to be dressed like just slightly classier than the people who are currently working there. You know, that's kind of your goal. You don't want to be underdressed. That's what you want to avoid.
Exactly.
So yeah, but like speaking
which is
of,
really hard in our field to come underdressed,
right? You know? Speaking of conflicting information, I mean, a while back, Jay Duckworth wrote a little article for Stage Directions with do's and don'ts, and he says very specifically, name drop. And then, you know, when we were talking with Jen, she says very specifically, don't name drop because she doesn't care. So that's like, you know, what do you do? Do you name drop or do you not? And so this probably gets back more into the resume side. I think we've probably talked about cover letters enough. So on the resume, you know, what do we mean by name drop? Usually you list like the credit of your supervisor, or if you're listing credits of shows you've worked on, like the director or something like that. And so if they're directors who may be well known in our field, you want to kind of list them. But if it's just like the director, not to demean high school teachers, but if it's just your high school teacher, I mean, unless you went to that high school, you're not going to know that person, you know. If they only work for that school, if they're not out working professionally, then why are you putting their name on? That sort of thing.
Yeah. Like, I like having the name of a set designer and a director on a resume for the most part, unless it is, like you just said, the high school situation where I have no idea who this person is. But most of the time, I might know one of them. You know, I might know of their work. I might know a connection to them. Especially when I was working in New York City, I made sure to have on my resume specifically all of the names, because I knew other people knew them, and that was a big highlight when they saw it.
Right, yeah.
And they're like, oh, you worked with so-and-so. I worked with them on a show last year. That was such an interesting experience, blah, 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 you know? It's a starting point to some people. But if you have names that nobody knows of, like high school teachers, that it doesn't really do much unless you have them down as your reference as
right,
well.
Right, yeah.
Because when you call the person, you can refer to that show specifically.
Yeah, if you have like, if you've done three shows where such and such was your director, and then they're also listed as your reference, then you instantly know why they're listed as a reference, how they know you. And then when you're talking to that reference, you could be like, oh, they worked on these three shows with you. Tell me about those experiences. So yeah, that's definitely good. But when we get into portfolios, yeah. You know, that's where you're going to sort of have all the credits for all the shows that you did. So you don't have to worry about like leaving out names of people that they might know about. But, you know, the thing with dropping names is it gives some sense of like the scale and caliber of the shows that you've worked on or the level of stress or that sort of thing. But if you've been working with maybe designers or directors they don't know about, you should still give some kind of sense of what it is. So like when you list a theater you worked at, you know, how many seats did the theater have? What kind of budgets were you working on? What was the size of the prop shop? You know, how many people were working there? If you were the assistant, was it a shop of two and there was just the prop master? If you were the prop master, what kind of crew did you have? Did you have overhire? Did you have apprentices? Did you have to teach high school students how to build props? You know, because there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of theaters out there that I'm not familiar with. So if you just have like, I was the prop master at, you know, Okie Dokie Theater, I don't know what that is, what kind of scale you're doing at. And it's a big difference if it's like a 100 seat black box theater that does two shows in the summer versus, you know, a 3,000 seat that's doing 14 shows in the summer with equity actors. You know, you want to, I need to know like what scale you were working at in the past so I know how you can handle the job that I'm interviewing for.
Yeah.
With.
Because it does make a difference. It really does. And there have been times where a lot of the theaters that I worked in New York when I was first starting out were a lot smaller, but I was working with directors and designers that were known and were tough, but nobody would have known that if I just left the theater name on right. there,
yeah.
you know? So how do you like to format your resumes?
So I think it's, you know, vital to keep it to one page, and I don't care how... Well, let me just say this. My resume is one page. So if you're graduating undergrad, you can definitely keep yours to one page. I promise. Yes. You do not need to fit it into any more. There's always information you can consolidate. So one page, I like, you know, obviously your name at the top, contact information.
Not overly large.
Yeah. Yes. You know, this is a chance where you could kind of get some personality in. So some things with the design of the resume, it's okay to have some color and maybe illustrative kind of decorative effects on it. But keep in mind that the person may be printing it out in black and white. You know, your production manager might be printing all the resumes out in black and white and handing them to the props master. So if the color is really subtle and basically, print it out in black and white and make sure it still looks good. Make sure it's still readable like that. So definitely have a readable font. You know, the body should be a consistent font, just one of the regular fonts, nothing curly, nothing thin. You know, the basic rule of thumb for designing something like this is a single font, maybe a second font for like a few of the headings, like your name is in a different font. Definitely don't do more than two.
Yeah, never do more than two.
If you're sending the resume to a specific job posting, just put all your contact information on it and your references. If it's more of like a cold call or something you're posting to your website, you know, just sort of general, anybody can access it. That's where you could kind of remove your contact information reference contact information and just say contact information available on request. You definitely don't have to be posting your address and your phone number to the public internet. But if it's specific, just put it on there. It's like, of course I'm going to want your contact information.
Yeah, right. So and same with references. I always put references upon request. I always just put that because it's easier.
Yeah. So that should be at the top. I usually like the sort of, you know, some people will say put the job title up there. I usually like that. You know, you basically say how you see yourself. So it's like prop artisan, prop builder, prop carpenter, prop master. Something simple. You don't have to like list every single thing you're potentially going to do or you want to do.
Yeah.
And this is something you could customize to the job. But, you know, it's...
I've seen, and I did this when I was starting out, and I would put like props master slash artisan and
yeah.
like slash, yeah. you know, and it's like, it's very unnecessary and mm-hmm. it's kind of weird.
Right. Yeah.
And what I have started to do is do what you just said, tailor it to what I'm interviewing right, for.
Yeah. Because you know? Something to think about, this happens in my theater, and I bet it happens at other places, but when we interview at somewhere like SETC, people are getting all mm-hmm. these like paper resumes, and then they're shoving them in their bag and flying home, and then they're like sorting them out to hand to me, hand to the lighting director, hand to the TD. So if you just have on the top props artisan, they know that it needs to get to me. As opposed to yeah. if you have listed up there stage management, then it might go to the stage manager. It might be a while before it gets to me, and I might have already filled that position. So it kind of, you yep. know, it just kind of helps in the sorting. So after that, then that's where you put all your information. You put your professional experience and you put your educational experience. You know, this is going to be different depending on where you are in your career. If you're just graduating, mm-hmm. your educational experience might be the biggest source of your experience. And so that'll probably mm-hmm. go first. If you've been working for a while or you have some good professional experience, then that should go first. You know, your educational experience is just going to go down in priority the more you get out of college. It's like, mm-hmm. unless you're graduating, unless you're applying to graduate school, we don't need to know what your GPA is. We don't even need to yeah. know if you graduated summa cum laude. You know, list your major for sure. You know, if you got theater, BA versus BFA is somewhat important yeah, in those early years. What do you like to put on your resume?
Well, since I've done a lot of freelancing, I kind of have it broken into two sections. Mm-hmm. I have more of my full-time work experience up top of the different theaters that I've worked for. And then after that, I do all my freelance stuff that's in New York. And you get to a point where you have to choose what shows to take away.
Right, yeah.
And what to keep on there, because mm-hmm. you want to keep it to one page.
Yeah.
And I always suggest, you know, if you had a bad experience somewhere, maybe you don't need that on your resume.
Right, yeah.
If you have enough on there and you really don't need it, mm-hmm. take it off. Because yeah. there have been times where I have looked through a resume and I saw either a name or a theater that I have worked with before and go, oh, I'm gonna text them real quick.
Yeah.
You know, I have a good relationship with them. And I'm like, oh, I just got so-and-so's resume. And they go, oh my gosh, let me tell you a story about them. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, okay, we're gonna have story time now.
Right.
And it just goes badly. So if you do have a bad experience, I would suggest maybe not put it on there.
Right, yeah. Yeah. If you don't want anybody to ask you about it, then leave it off.
Yeah, exactly. You can... I mean, there have been times where my friends have been doing interviews and they're going through these applications and they see a name that I have talked about in the past because they applied for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then him and I are now talking about this person that I've only interviewed, but it was such a terrible experience.
Mm-hmm.
And now this person is getting this information. And it, you know, yeah.
Right, yeah.
But then it can also be really good because if it was an awesome person, of course, I'm going to go on and on about mm-hmm. how amazing they are.
Yeah.
And that'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so after the freelancing on the resume, I have just my brief education and then I have skills.
Mm-hmm.
And skills is such an interesting section mm-hmm. to resumes. And I feel like this is for resumes just anywhere in life.
Yeah.
Don't put things that are unnecessary,
mm-hmm.
you know, like things that they're not going to do anything for me. I don't care about them. You're just like taking up space to look, oh, look, right. I have more skills, yeah. you know,
like there's no quota,
put the basics down. And also if you can't do it, don't put it down.
Mm-hmm.
If you have used a table saw once in your life, don't say I'm a carpenter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because you'll get tested.
Right.
You'll be tested for sure.
Yeah.
And there are times where I go through the skills and that's a question I ask in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
I say, oh, well, I saw your you do welding. What kind of welding do you do? How long have you been doing it for? Da, 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 da. And they're like, oh, well, I did it once in class, mm-hmm. and it was cool. And I'm like, so yeah. You can't weld.
And there's also, you know, there's such like a wide, a single word on your skill can have such a wide range. So if you put like carpentry yeah. down, does that mean, you know, you can use a cutlass and build a flat? Or does that mean you can like construct a reproduction in Louis XIV chair?
Exactly.
It's like, a lot of that goes in your portfolio. So what I always think is like, basically like you do your portfolio first and then you kind of pull the skills from that onto your resume. So the skills on your resume mm-hmm. should sort of be like an introduction to what you're going to be seeing. It's really, for me, it's really difficult if somebody has a skill listed, a construction skill listed, but they don't have anything using that skill in their portfolio, then it makes me wonder like why they put it on there and what else they're kind of bending the truth on. So, you know, specific software is easy to list as a skill. Obviously, if you know how to use Excel, if you know how to use Photoshop, that's easy to go on there. But
definitely Adobe.
But those broader things like sculpting can mean anything from like doing the fake rock walls out of styrofoam to like doing an entire like lifelike human figure.
Yeah, which I am totally like guilty of doing this before. When I was starting out, I would just have basic carpentry mm-hmm. and painting mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And it probably, honestly, is still on my resume because I haven't updated it in forever.
Right.
But that could mean anything. Like, what kind of painting?
Yeah.
Are you saying you can do, like, oil paintings for me? Or are you really good at wood graining? Or are you really good at this? Blah, 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 blah. You know?
And is it, like, people have given you the brush and the paint and told you what to do? Or is it you've had to come up with a way to solve a problem using paint and figured it out from start to finish?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think the skills section is important, but it's always going to be like a lot of caveats, and it's really tricky to just figure out what should go on there and what shouldn't.
Yeah, I keep mine very basic. And like I said, I need to update my resume. It's been forever since I've updated it, but it's hard to decide what exactly needs to be there and how much information, because that's the other thing. You want your resume to be easy to read. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to just pick it up, glance at it, mm-hmm. and things pop out and be like, oh, they worked at this theater with this person. Oh, they did Music Man. Oh, goodness, I did that. That was mm-hmm. a hoot and a holler. You know, like being able to easily read. And if you have this huge paragraph at the bottom with skills, I'm going to be like, oh boy, here we go.
use white space, use lines and headers wherever possible, you know, differentiate the areas by like bolding text or highlighting, you know, there's a lot of,
you can look
online and see a lot of ways, and you don't have to get fancy. You don't have to use one of these like ultra graphical designed resumes. Please don't do that. But there's ways to like just space out the text, you know, use the full width as much as possible, use columns, use tables. Mm-hmm. if you have the dates, you know, sort of in a column on the right, make sure all the dates mm-hmm. are lined up vertically with that. Don't like have one column, you know, all the way to the right for one section, and then the next section it's like slightly to the left of that. That kind of throws it all off.
Yeah, it has to look organized, because if it's not organized and presentable, mm-hmm. that's, you know, a point against you.
Yeah.
Because if you're not going to take the time to do this, what are you going to take the time for when you're working for me?
Right. And I've heard some people say, like, your resume is the first example of a paper prop that you're giving to a potential supervisor.
That's
like,
so true.
This is showing how you design and craft an item, mm-hmm. and can you do it and do it well? Do you have the eye to design it well? So it's all very important.
Yeah. We were also talking about spell checking in a cover letter, but it's also so important in a resume, because I have seen resumes where they misspell the titles of the shows they worked.
Right.
And I'm immediately like, seriously?
Yeah.
You did this show and you don't even know how to spell it?
Right.
You know, immediate turn off.
Spell check. And have other people proofread it too, because spell check is only going to find the words that are spelled wrong. They're not going to catch a word that's used wrong.
Correct. Correct. And if it's misspelled, especially with computers, autocorrect,
Yeah.
There is no excuse.
Using the wrong for it to be, there.
You know?
Using the wrong like, your. Yeah.
It's bonkers.
So kind of the last thing about resume. Most people, they want it to be saved as a PDF. You know, the problem with any other document file is it might show up differently on somebody else's mm-hmm. computer, even a Microsoft Word document. Some people yeah. use Mac, some people use PCs. And the only way to make sure that somebody is looking at the resume exactly how you laid it out is to save it as a PDF. And it's also a file correct. That everybody can read. So, and it's a file. I mean, I could look at PDFs on my phone. I could look at them at mm-hmm. any computer. So PDF, and then make sure that you save it. The best way to save it is sort of, you know, first name dash last name dash resume, something like that. Mm-hmm. Don't have some like auto-generated file name like PT2018G or something that like only you get, something like that. So put your name, because again, like going way back to the beginning of this episode, we sort of take all the files from all the applicants and stick them in a drive and sort of keep them all organized. So you want to know like, I want to look at Eric Hart's resume. So you just open up the window and right there is, you know, Eric-Hart-resume. It's like, that's the file mm-hmm. I need. Instead exactly. of like, you know, 100 files labeled my resume. That's not helpful.
Oh, that drives me absolutely bonkers. And I'm just like, okay, well, I don't know which one is yours now. And now I have to, don't like it.
Right.
Yeah, it gets very annoying. I do have one more question for you sure. on resumes. And I haven't seen this a lot, but this is something that I was taught in school that I never liked. And I think I did maybe the first 6 months of my career and then was like, this is mm-hmm. weird and stopped. But logos on a resume. Mm-hmm. Now, I can understand if you have a company or you are a professional freelancer and you have a logo, you know, you are a brand in a sense.
Right.
Then I get that. You know, that's fine. But when you're fresh out of college mm-hmm. – I don't understand why you have a logo. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. I find it weird.
Yeah, I definitely find it with the people sort of fresh out of college and people who are new, and it's cute. And maybe that's what they're teaching people, you know. They're always teaching people to brand yourself and
well,
what people think is like that means make a logo.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't do anything on my end. I'm not like judging people's logos and, you know, so I don't know. I've always thought it was innocuous enough. It's like, all right, here comes another undergrad with a logo. That's cute. That's fine.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't work. Yeah. It doesn't change my opinion about them or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's strange to me. Cause I was taught to do that.
Right.
And after a while, I was like, this is weird. Mm-hmm. And I think what it does for me is it's an immediate flag that you're new.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care.
Right.
You know, if your work's good, your work's yeah. good.
And I
care,
you know,
if you're new or not.
I interview a lot of people who are new because I'm usually hiring apprentice positions or interviewing mm-hmm. people for school. So that's kind of the world I'm living in. So I'm... Mm-hmm. I might be more annoyed if it was like somebody in their 30s and they're still doing that, but they've never actually had their own business.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like if you do have your own business, that's awesome. Like, mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
But if you don't, it's weird.
I would say like, don't get hung up on it. Don't hold off applying for a job because you haven't done your logo yet. Don't stay up all night trying to pick the perfect color for your resume or for your logo
yeah.
or things like that. Like if that's fun for you, sure, go ahead. I think it's harmless, and maybe somebody will disagree with me, but don't stress yourself out over it and develop anxiety because you haven't done it. Like, I honestly, if somebody doesn't have a logo or some kind of branded resume, you know, as long as it's laid out cleanly and I can read it, that's what I want, you know.
Exactly. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah. Cool.
All right.
So I'm sure there's tons more we could talk about. And I'm sure lots
I'm
of
sure.
people are going to have
gone
comments and questions. So maybe we'll do a follow-up episode in a few weeks. But until then, that's all the time we have.
It is. thank you guys for listening in. And reminder, next week we're going to talk about some portfolios.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at Silk Mache. And you can email us some questions, ideas, thoughts about today's episode at propspodcast@gmail.com.
And subscribe to us at iTunes or Google Play. You can also go to our website, silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com, where you can find all of our old episodes. And you can also find a link to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/silkmache, where you can throw in a couple bucks every month to help support us.
Yeah, so we can get some better equipment.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll see you guys next week. This has been Silk Flowers and
Papier-Mâché Hearts with your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. Bye. Bye.